TUC Radio, Time of Useful Consciousness. John Trudell at a benefit for the UWA of Colombia. The many remembrances that were written about John Trudell after his passing on December 8, 2015, showed the extraordinary width and depth of his engagement. Most know of his music and poetry, or of the films that he participated in. Not everybody knew that up to 1979, writing and performing was not even a thought or plan or dream of his. In the 10 years prior to 1979, Trudell had participated in the Indians of All Tribes occupation of Alcatraz Island that began in 1969. From 1973 to 79, he served as national chairman of AIM, the American Indian Movement. This 10-year period of activism ended for Trudell on February 11, 1979. He had led a march to the FBI headquarters in Washington, D.C., when 12 hours later, a fire of suspicious origin burned down Trudell's home on the Shoshone Paiute Reservation in Nevada, killing his pregnant wife, Tina, their three small children, and Tina's mother. All friends and observers of John Trudell agree that the murder, and that's really what it was never explained that it could have been an accident, was the turning point in his life. Trudell said he withdrew from the world and writing words became his way to keep some sanity and continue to survive. But unlike others who, after such unspeakable loss, retired for the rest of their lives, Trudell re-engaged and went public again. He was an early supporter of native fishing rights. He participated in the forest protection campaigns of the 1980s. He helped tribes who resisted uranium mining on their lands. He spoke against nuclear war and was arrested at the site of the Diablo Canyon nuclear power plant in 1981. And he became an early voice for climate protection. Trudell also became a historian and thinker of great depth on both the indigenous history of this land and what he called the legacy of Columbus. He compared Columbus to a virus that caused an epidemic we all are now suffering. Trudell became one of the eloquent anti-corporate critics of so-called Western civilization. His extraordinary concept of how the combination of fossil fuels and technology created the most powerful corporate industrial Reich, as he calls it as a play on the Third Reich of Hitler. That concept makes us realize today why the fight for climate protection and against fossil fuel use is so devastatingly difficult. The talk you are about to hear was part of yet another engagement of his. John Trudell supported international campaigns against fossil fuel extraction on indigenous lands. Here's the conclusion of his talk in support of the UWA of Colombia, whose fight against oil drilling continues to this day. John Trudell with a mini-lecture on voting.
When you vote for the lesser of the two evils, I condemn you. What you doing? Actually, if you vote for either one of the evils, I condemn you. What you doing? By our acceptance of the lesser of the two evils, so to speak, we're using our intelligence to create what goes on. See, I don't vote. I never have. I vote in Amsterdam, whatever that means. Right? picked a winner, too. We didn't have to have recounts. We knew. But I don't vote because, I mean, my reasons for not voting are very valid. See, when they created the voting system here, the democracy here, when they created it, I was the majority. Hey, look at me over here. Oh, I see you. So you're the enemy. You can't play. So the little old majority rule thing came out of the smallest number of people, all right, the smallest number of people on the entire hemisphere, continent. All right, they decided it was going to be majority rule. There's something about it, right, that I don't trust. I inherently don't trust it. And I don't understand why you do, okay? So now that we're the smallest numerical minority on our own land base, they say, come vote. In that scenario, who's stupid, me or them? Anyway. And I'm bringing this up about democracy for this reason. And this is about coherency and using our intelligence. I think that every generation of human beings has a responsibility to decide how they and their immediate descendants will live with the earth. I think it's our responsibility. All right? I think it's our responsibility to do that. When I look at democracy as a native person, see, to me, it's just another chain. You know, freedom is a lie. You know? Democracy. I mean, you know, think about it. Every democracy had a land-owning class. Every democracy had some form of slavery. Every democracy had some form of sexism. And I'm saying this not because I'm trying to overthrow anybody's anything, because, you know, it just, you know, it's not about that. It's about, oh yeah, it's about the next generation. We live in an evolutionary reality. And maybe it needs to evolve. And maybe in the best interest of our seventh generation, it may be the enemy. But I don't mean just it by itself. I'm talking about all of the industrial faces of control systems. Whether it's democracy or fascism or socialism or any one of these industrial faces and mechanisms to control the mass of people. Because every one of these systems have a small class and an ethnic rich. An industrial ruling class and a planetary ethnic rich. And every one of these governments, no matter what they call them, they serve that master. So don't misunderstand me. This isn't about, you know, this is about a perceptional reality here. I come from a tribe. And whatever's been going on in my evolutionary journey, I still remember that. I'm confused about a lot of things, but I remember that. I remembered it when I was born. I've never been a question about the memory. But they're trying to take that memory away. But the memory of the tribe, see, 100 years ago, 120 years ago, Geronimo said the Americans, and they're messed up, you know. Said it. He called them the Americans. See, so I feel a kinship to those ancestors and what they saw and what they tried to stand up against. I feel more of a kinship to them than I do to be a lapdog to this system and promote its lie. All right, because I think it's irresponsible. And I think that when people are afraid to think about what needs to be thought about, that's the danger of the lie. Casualty of war, afraid to think. You know, so I will say democracy because you're not supposed to say anything bad about democracy, but I'll say it. And I'm not saying what I'm saying. I don't look at it as I'm saying something bad. I'm just saying this is what it is. You've heard the other side, so I want to say this side. Right? Freedom of speech. Let's go to freedom of speech. See, I think the part of the lie there, all right, it should be about responsibility of thought. Freedom of speech, responsibility of thought. Responsibility of thought will then take care of free speaking. But freedom of speech, or freedom, it isn't about freedom of speech. Let me make this more. The idea of freedom. See, words, every word has its own meaning because it makes its own sound in a vibratory world, all right? So every word has its own meaning. You know, so like democracy, that noise, that sound, noise, whatever it is, my ancestors 30 generations ago never heard that sound. That noise was never made here on this land base. it's alien to this. In a way, he was just killing time, or was time killing him? Which way did Up go after he found down? Away in a city, it's lonesome in town. Away in a country, all is not fair. Away in a heart, he's been locked out. Away in a dream, who has he become? Away in a mind, been through the wrong. Away in a society that just can't see. Away in a way, how it feels to be free. He was just killing time, or was time killing him? Which way did Up go after he found down? And for us, so about words. So I think the word freedom shouldn't be used so frivolously. You know, and I think that somewhere in the course of this, it is about responsibility. This is a word that needs to float around in our consciousness. We need to plant that seed and let it nurture in our consciousness that life's about responsibility. Because we will synchronize closer to what it is we seek in our life. Because it's very difficult to deal with an abstraction of freedom by a people who don't know who they are and what they're saying, you know. Okay. No offense. I'm not talking about you unless I am, right? And believe is another word, right? Freedom, believe, democracy, believe. See, I come from people who have beliefs. And I'm a part of those beliefs, and I respect those beliefs because they're part of my reality. But then on the other hand, every time I hear somebody say, I believe, it makes me cringe inside. So I cringe a lot. I go, what? No, hold it. Misuse of a word here. Throwing the wrong sound out in the vibratory world. It should be more in harmony, right? The sound. And I think believe might be a word that's not in harmony, although that's the illusion that's been created that we've been led to believe. All right. But see, I think it's better to say either I know or I don't know, or I think. I think. I have intelligence. I think. My intelligence has been drugged with misinformation. My intelligence has been sent on a trip. I'm tripping, so I believe. Can we understand it that way? Friends. So it's more passive, right? Believing. And I think we should respect our intelligence, and it should always be active. You know? It should be active. If we can create our own daily insecures and miseries and fears, we can use that same intelligence to create a whole much better reality, I'm telling you. See? And the collective reality, all the causes and movements and the things that we feel are right and that we chase, see, that reality is not going to really change until we change this other one. And here's why I'm going to say this, because this thing has been going on for like 3,000 years. You know, everybody's been protesting and standing up to see, but as it gets us and alters our perception of self and reality, right, the same old struggles come, see. It's just a new generation saying new words, dancing to new music, to new instruments. But it's the same old thing. Check out a little bit of Paris or France in 1430. Check that place out, man. Right? It's the same thing. Check out the rise of industrial civilization or the industrial revolution in America in the 1800s. Same thing. So the same struggle by the human beings to just try to stay alive, right, has been going on for a long time. So what I mean is it isn't that we haven't been trying for such a long time. We've been trying to write a thing to make it more ride the balance. It's us who are being mined, so we need to interfere with that mining process. So we need to become as clear as we can. You know, it's a responsibility. There are no rights and no freedom without responsibility, I guarantee it. To not be afraid of the word, see, I think responsibility, I think that's the liberator's word, right? You want to be free, then be responsible. Right? You want to be free, then be responsible. I think that's the Liberator's word. Because then we are taking direct action with our intelligence. Because, see, there's not anything wrong with us. How we perceive reality. But from this moralistic thing, there's not something wrong with us. We really need to be, we need to be real to ourselves. We will get closer to synchronizing our balance. The first thing is we need to be real to ourselves. We need to be able to face ourselves, because if we can't face ourselves, then, you know, we should think about that. Because the other thing is, whoever it is, the coming generations, the Creator, whoever it is, if we're not willing to face ourselves, all right, then in some kind of a way, we diminish our respect for them. Because we are here to be real. But if we would look at ourselves clearly, the Dene, the Navajo have a way of saying going to the fourth mind, which means to look at everything. But you rise out of it. You look at it from outside, from the top, the bottom, all the way around, from the inside. You look at it from under it. You look at it, a thing for every way that you can, and you see it for what it is. And then you act. See, and we need to understand to do that without judgment. It's not our responsibility or our right to judge. You can judge nothing without judging yourself. It's just that reality, you know. So what's the trip, you know? And it's already been determined that most of us, we've judged ourselves negatively through our fears and our doubts and our insecurities. So let's look at that thing about judgment. It's our responsibility to see clearly and learn from what we learn from our clarity and our coherency. That's our responsibility. It's not our responsibility to judge and condemn. So in order to be real to ourselves, you know, we got to be careful about self-rationalization and justification and these little things that pop up disguised as something else. We need to be real to ourselves. And if in our reality there are shameful things, all right, then don't lie to yourself about it. Because a shameful thing isn't necessarily really a shameful thing, it's how we perceive. See, everything should be seen exactly for what it is. Because it's also time to turn another thing that goes back into the spiritual reality that's been altered by the religious reality. And that reality is, there's too much pride. The way I see pride in some ways used, see, I think pride is something I'm proud of you. See, I think it's something you give, but it's not something you take. Because every time I've ever seen anyone take pride, they take too damn much of it and then they fuck the thing up. I've seen it organizationally. I've seen it individually. I've been the player. So I think, you know, maybe in life is really more about humility. See, we come from an ancestral past, a part of the genetic memory. See, where humility was connected to our participation in reality, and we were grateful and we were thankful. See, so many times, again, out of using the word as a habit, see, many times, all right, when we say I'm proud, really we're happy. And wouldn't it be more clear to just say that? I'm happy, or I'm glad, or I appreciate it. The pride comes from the human, but these things come from the being. Because, I mean, it's these types of alterations that were done to us, all right, that keep us from synchronizing. The only answer is that we have the intelligence and the responsibility and the ability, all right, to create the solutions to the problem that we're confronted with. Because there are no solutions now. I guarantee you, you know, you can deal with the lesser of the two evils, but there is no political solution. And I think you know that. I think everyone knows that, right? But they just feel powerless to do it, so they want to avoid dealing with that reality. And I'm saying, hey, let's look at reality and deal with reality. I got intelligence. I accept the challenge. I have the ability. This is why I was given it. So there are some miscalculations in me. I kind of messed up a few times along the way. So what? I learned from it. It's part of who I am, right? But that doesn't mean the coherent parts and the clear parts aren't clear and aren't coherent. Somehow, in some subtle way, it's been created into the human being's minds. That, see, you got to be the perfect person in order to get it done. But at the same time, all right, nothing's perfect, and we all know that and say it. So it's like a contradiction. So just accept ourselves for who we are and show respect to our Creator, all right, by using the gifts that the Creator gave to us. And I'm not trying to get you to believe me or not believe me or any of that, right? But it's really about thinking, you know. The objective is about thinking. Because our relationship to power is connected in our relationship to clear, coherent use of our intelligence. All right, you had some rain here, right? And some wind. Okay. So let's look at us. Every human being is a raindrop. All right? And when enough of the raindrops become clear and coherent, they then become the power of the storm that the existing reality has to endure. And you can't arrest it, indict it, change it. It has to deal with it in a realistic way. Well, maybe human consciousness, maybe we're all snowflakes or raindrops, we're little tremblers in the earth, right? Maybe we're all part of that. See, when we become clear with our coherency, then this collective thing happens, and you have power. And on the way to that power is the power that we connect to as we live our lives. Because I'm telling you, you know, how many of you feel powerless to deal with your life? And I'm telling you, if there's anybody in here that feels powerless to deal with your life, you know, don't take two aspirin. For the next generation that's coming, I think an understanding about the value and reality of the intelligence, of our intelligence, I think it's very crucial that they have that understanding to make it through this, because we're being mined at a rapid rate. And I think it's very crucial, all right, to the continuation of the living species, not the humanoid species, you know, I mean the living. So it's got to be put into the intelligence, them to have an understanding, the next generations. But the only way we can do it is we can't tell it to them. I mean, we can say it to them, but we have to show it to them. Because we are a part of an evolutionary reality, and we will influence the evolution. We will, because our intelligence is always active, so it's just about taking responsibility. But we will influence the evolutionary reality. And we can influence the evolutionary reality out of a base of loss and frustration and self-judgment and things that's been going on for the last 300 years or 400 years here, which has led to this situation. Or we can use some clarity and coherency and influence the evolutionary reality in a more clear and coherent way. Every struggle that we must engage with, whether it's political or economic or social, all these struggles are necessary, all right, to keep the circulation going. The other part of that reality is we have to outthink what it is that we're challenged by or that oppresses us or does whatever it is. We have to outthink it. It's that simple. The first act of being free and liberation, all right, is the act of taking our intelligence back, taking our imagination back, our ability to think. That's the first act of liberation. That is the very first act. All right, of conscious liberation. The first steps towards respect for the Creator is understanding that we have that intelligence and doing the second act. It's our intelligence. And for our next generation, you know, we have a responsibility to direct as much intelligence into that as we can. Because this thing about life and death, you know, this technologic reality has been around for 3,000 or 4,000 years, however long it's been around, you know. But its whole reality is based upon death, so therefore, at some point, it must die. Our whole objective as human beings is to stay alive. Do you get it? I mean really alive, not surviving and existing. I'm talking about alive, connected to life and living. See, we have to outlast it because we can't outfight it because its violence and its aggressive mindset, all right, is beyond parallel. But that doesn't mean that it's powerful. That just means it's violent and it's aggressive and it's without parallel, and you better be damn careful of it. But that's what that means about power. Our relationship to clarity and coherency in the use of our intelligence is our relationship to power, and we can outthink it. Simple math. It's a mathematical thing. In the authoritarian state system, only X amount of people are given permission to think. Okay? So at some point, theoretically, we will out surround them if we will just do what is necessary to get there. Your descendants and my descendants depend upon us, right? To keep the reality of the living alive. And we are going to influence the outcome no matter what we do. So all I'm talking about is, well, let's take some responsibility, right? And let's influence it in a more clear and coherent way. Outthink them. Trust ourselves and our ability to think. And each and every one of us was given just as much intelligence as we need. It's not a contest. I'm going to close now. And I thank you for being here and getting whatever you got out of this, right?
Thank you.
I'm not responsible. I'm just this rag doll, and there are these entities just here. I want to vent today, so here, get him. Raven brought beaded serpent and the Alaskan thunder. Realities yet to come. Good thoughts are good way life. Wrapped in the universe, the unborn sleep in dream time. Day and the sun is on its way. Think good thoughts, thoughts of lightened mind. Dream dreams dreaming brings. Sense rush of newfound find. View where harmonies sing. Follow the sky into the blue. You are part sky. Sky is part you. There are stars that bring the night. There are thoughts to bring clear sight. Thinking good makes for a strong heart, nourishment for spirit and soul. A good path, a good way to give. Belief creates what we believe. Good words, good thoughts, good actions, a way human beings live. Raven brought beaded serpent and the Alaskan thunder, and I thank you for being here.
That was the conclusion of a one-hour talk by the Native American poet, musician, and activist John Tudell. Rebroadcast in his memory. John Tudell died, age 69, in December 2015. He spoke in March 2001 at a benefit for the UWA of Colombia. Tudell had someone make one final post to his Facebook page 13 hours after he passed. It read simply, "My ride showed up. Celebrate love. Celebrate life." John Tudell, February 15, 1946, December 8, 2015. You can hear this program again for free on TUC Radio's website, tucradio.org. Look at the newest programs or the podcast page. My name is Maria Gelarden. Thank you for listening. Give us a call.